Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody, and you're very welcome to the Young Stock Podcast, the podcast by young journalists for young readers and listeners from the Irish Farmers Journal, supported by Husqvarna. My name is Peter McCann. I'm a Northern Ireland correspondent with the Irish Farmers Journal. We're in the middle of a bit of a cold snap at the start of March here, but hopefully it isn't derailing anyone's farming plans, be it lambing or getting cows calving out the grass, or even some spring sowing. On the podcast this week, we have Fermanagh sheep and pedigree cattle breeder Alistair Armstrong. If you're a young farmer, a young person in rural Ireland, working in agriculture, or just want to hear more about rural life, this is the place for you. To get in touch with your opinions and feedback, you can email youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or leave a WhatsApp voice note at 086-8366-465. Before we go any further, a word of thanks to our sponsor. Want to transform your farm this spring? Go along to the Husqvarna Open Days and Autumnmore Evenings taking place nationwide in March and April to see and learn more about Husqvarna's exciting range of equipment for all your farming needs. For more information or to find your local Husqvarna dealer, visit husqvarna.ie. Husqvarna, ready when you are. As I mentioned earlier, this week's guest is Fermanagh farmer Alistair Armstrong. My tally of Northern participants in the podcast takes Fermanagh to two, so they're leading the way in the county table here. So, Alistair, it's great to have you on the show. I suppose just for a start, maybe give us some background to yourself and to your farm in Fermanagh.
Hello, Peter. We farm outside Tempo in County Fermanagh. We have about 160 acres there at home, and then I also shepherd an estate in Fymile Town that has about 60 acres of lowland green ground, and then about 1,200 acres of heather mountain. So we're running a few pedigree Charlies and a few pedigree limousines, and then our main enterprise is North Country Cheviot Sheep, where we run about 150 what's classed as park-type North Country Cheviots, and between the hill flock we have about 150 ewes as well between the estate up here and the farm at home. But we run the majority of them all pure and aim to sell about 150 females each year and upwards of about 50 rams. So that's our main enterprise on the farm.
So just on the Cheviot sheep, like just for people maybe who are listening to this who have no knowledge of sheep whatsoever, just describe them to me, and in particular, what do you mean there by the park type? Or I know there's a Wicklow Cheviot. Like, what's the difference between the two of them?
Well, the North Country Cheviot park type would be a big framed of a sheep. It would be more suited to green uplands and onto the good green ground and the lowland. you're looking for a good body, cheap, with a bit of length, good wool. We try to keep away from anything with a wee bit of kemp. I know wool's not worth a big pile at the moment, but in the climate we're in here in the West, you need a good skin to keep out the elements. The hill type is a smaller, more compact sheep that we graze on the lesser favoured areas. They do exceptionally well on the hill coming off flesh. Our hogs go up in the beginning of February to the hill and don't come off until October whenever they're coming down for being tipped. So they're smaller, compact sheep, suitable for grazing at their harsher environment and converted into good protein, ideal for finishing. Get a good lamb off that we can finish quickly on the lowland ground.
So your lambs, you're finishing there, those rams, you're finishing them right through, are you? Or where are you taking them? You know, are you, do you sell them to the mart, or do you take them to a factory? Or?
Well, this past 3 years, we bring them up to the weight and then sell them mainly through the Clocker Mart here as fats. But with the way lamb has went in the last year and the cost of finishing them, their lambs, we're tempted maybe to sell them at stores next year. Well, I suppose this year now, because the store lamb trade was so strong, and I don't think we gain much by keeping them on to finishing them. It all depends on where the market is at the time and how much grass we have surplus.
Mm-hmm. And are you're creeping them lambs, are you? Or feeding any meal, or?
We try to only feed them whenever, I suppose, they hit about 38, 40 kilos. We'll then hit them with the creep, peel off that batch of lambs, creep them there for 3 to 4 weeks just to put that nice finish of fat on them, and then let them eat the spec. They need that wee bit of meal just to get a good fat covering on them, just to finish them and get them away as quick as possible.
I understand exactly. I'm farming sheep too. What do you mean there about that time of year, you weigh up, is it better to take 85 pounds in your hand in August and forget about them and build up a bit of grass, or do you torch yourself and run about and feed? And it's just not straightforward knowing what to do. Like, but so then the females, you say you're they're obviously not for the hook at all. Where are they sold, or what's your outlets there for selling them as breeding stock?
We will sell quite a few privately because we are scraping monitored, so at least that we can export until the Southern Ireland, and we would even send quite a few females now across to Europe this last few years for that market, for establishing pure flocks out there in Europe. In 2022, ourselves and another breeder started up an in-lamb sale, and we had it there in February, and we're the prime top end of our females will be going to it. We had it as an export sale there this year, and there was a great demand. Ourselves, we think we had two that went as far as Cork, and there must have been another three actually went down to the south of England. There's a real strong demand there for them females lately, which is great to see. People even picking up show stock out of it that they can take on and show as ewe lambs. They're buying them as ewe lambs, showing them as gimmers, and then have good breeding stock on further down the line.
And yourself then, when like for changing the bloodline round, or where do you go for your rams? For you're obviously breeding all your own replacements there, but where do you go for a real top to change it up or to push the thing on genetics wise?
Well, that's got a wee bit difficult now since, I suppose, the effects of Brexit has kicked in, because we would have always went to Scotland and try to bring in the best sheep that we could, that we needed to improve the flock. So since Brexit, we've had to start going over in July and trying to pick a shortlist and get them genotyped to see if they can come in. There's no point us buying something over there at a few thousand and then finding out that you can't bring them in. So we normally go, the sales we sort of focus on in Scotland, there's a sale Lockerbie in September, and then in September there's also one up in the far north at a place called Thurso. So that's where our park type stock rams normally come from. And then the Hillsack area, we go up into Sutherland, a wee place called Lurg, and that is where we're normally sourcing our hill rams. We're normally normally buying them as 2 and 3 year old rams. There's no real market there for ram lambs. We always have to buy either a shearling or 2 or 3 year old. And then if we bring in something, we normally try to keep one of the best sons and use it as well in the flock because it's been acclimatized to our ground. Bringing in something from so far away into the west here, they need to be acclimatized to the ground for them to really go on and do well with us, we find.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. On the cattle end of things, I suppose, what are you keeping there? You have a few pedigrees, or I suppose is an enterprise that interests you, or is it the sheep more as your passion, Nick? Or?
Well, we always had suck cows from whenever I was young, so we found that at one stage there, it wasn't paying to produce a weanling to sell each year, so we sort of got rid of the suck cows and replaced them with a handful of pedigrees between the Charlies and the Limousines, just to have something in the shed. We had the shed space there for them, and trying to produce something that we like the look of. We wouldn't be into the show scene in the cattle or anything, or going to the sales. You're selling them nearly commercially. We try to, as little meal, everything we're doing is nearly off grass, what we can. It doesn't matter if it's the rams or the bulls we're producing that they go on and do well. So for replacements within the Limousines and Charlies, we're normally using the right bit of sack semen just to get heifers, really. That's what we were sort of trying to build up the herd. And we've flushed a cow or two in the past and have a couple embryos in the ground that then we can use them on our own herd because of the different bloodlines that we started with.
And then, Alistair, a question just asked everyone on this podcast who's farming in their own right. Today, we're recording this a few days early on this broadcast, the 10th of March, I suppose. What were you doing on your farm today? Like, or what was your main jobs, aside from the usual, maybe feeding and that? What's on the agenda at the minute for you?
Well, up at the estate here, we started there yesterday pitting up a polytunnel. Hopefully, it'll be up before the lambs start now in another week's time, 10 days, where we're starting into that there. And I suppose we're trying to get set up for lambing time and clearing out pens. We picked off a few sheep there that will be hopefully going to Balmoral Show. So we're setting up pens out of the road for them there that they can be kept clean. And with the weather there at the moment being very cold, and we just have them sheared there last week, so we can't throw them out to the field yet. So they're sitting in a pen. So we're just getting set up for that there, set up for lambing, and then just doing your day-to-day chores of making sure all ewes are fit and healthy whenever you're doing your rounds morning and evening, and making sure nothing's caught in their back, and starting to feed ewes there now. We only feed them maybe 2-3 weeks out from lambing. We're not looking for a big lamb at birth. We want to get the ewe well managed, that she lambs naturally herself. And we'll try and grow the lamb on the ewe's milk whenever it comes out. So a lot of management goes into managing the ewes and trying to keep enough grass in front of them.
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree entirely with that. But the feeding, I think sometimes when you see some of the feed rates that the meat companies in particular push, you know, I just find it astonishing. If I for that, the manuals to be prolapsed and the reeds just steady, you know. So I understand exactly what you're saying there, but just keep enough protein going into them to make sure they've decent-sized lamb and have milk immediately and colostrum, but you can overdo it very quickly, I think. But in fairness, you must be in decent enough country there too. Like, you're not lambing very late. Like, you know, you're talking kind of 20th of March, is it your start date? Or when, like, you know, compared to some hill flocks, it'll be well into April maybe before they get going in earnest.
Yeah, well, the park flock, it'll start in around the 15th, 17th. They'll start lambing down. We actually had a ewe lamb there the weekend that was bought at the in-lamb sale. And she's a wee bit earlier, but on the good ground, them big park type, we try to get them over and done. And the ones we'll pit to the border leaster and the blue leaster, we'll try to get them all sort of done with it before you get into the hill lambing in April. So we try to keep things tight in the park end. I get them over and done, and then we start into the hill ewes lambing. They'll start in around the 2nd or 3rd of April. We need to be finished lambing really by, I suppose, the 3rd week in April, 90-95% of them lambed anyway. So then we can start preparing then for the summer jobs, I suppose, getting ground closed off for silage, getting sheds cleaned out, getting all the jobs. It's just never-ending wee jobs. We're always moving on. You're always looking a month down the line to see where you're going to be. And if you don't prepare, you can end up in a bit of a mess maybe whenever you get to the summertime.
No, that's right. Sometimes I think in farming, you know, you're always thinking, you know, 6 or 8 weeks ahead of yourself or even further, but I feel like you're almost planning your life away to an extent as well. You know, you're never really living in the moment a lot of the time. You're thinking about, as you say, exactly, get them lambed and get the silage cut and then or slurry out and silage, and, you know, it just goes on continuously with that, such as farming, I suppose. On that, so just at lambing, you say you're putting up a polytunnel. Are you lambing all them ewes inside, or is it that just the first batch and the hill ones are lambed outside, or how do you work that?
Well, because this year that we're going to be sort of split with the estates, we normally were lambing theirs out, and then me running up, the farms are about 6 miles apart, so running back and forth, if you were looking out in the fields and something went wrong, you know, you could waste an awful lot of the day trying to get things gathered into a corner to catch a ewe. So this year we've decided to go and put up this polytunnel on the estate to try and make, I suppose, my job easier and to take a wee bit of the pressure off the grazing ground, that at least then if the ewes are in for 2-3 weeks before while they're lambing, it's saving the ground that then we can put them straight back out onto a wee bird of grass, as long as there's a wee bit of urea or something sown on it there. It all depends how long this cold snap lasts for.
Yeah.
If it lasts the weekend and then things start to heat up, maybe we'll get a wee bit of fertilizer out, get a wee bit of slurry out. And it's all about, we're just trying to manage things a wee bit better that we get better returns. We found lambing out, yes, we can get away pretty well, but numbers were just getting maybe too high for lambing out and letting things go. We all single sire mate all our sheep, so we need to identify them all at birth. And if you're spending time running around the field after ewes lambing and trying to find out who they were and all, at least in a shed, you have everything pretty regimental and easier management and just doing things a wee bit better.
Yeah. And do you find there, like, do you settle okay inside when you put them in, just for like you say, that few weeks before? You may, some people say, oh, you should have, if you're going to put them in, they need to be in, you know, shortly after scanning, or if you're hunted off winter grazing or whatever, at the end of January. You put yours in just for a few weeks beforehand and they're fine?
Yeah, well, even at home there, like the ewes lambing down on the 17th of March, you know, they're still out because the ground weather conditions have let it be that way. We normally wouldn't house into the beginning of March and then lambing down on the 17th. You know, they're only in 2 weeks roughly before they start lambing. In a shed, you can maybe get things hurt trying to get in and feeding them, and a wee bit of bullying going on, at least out in the field. There's a wee bit more, there's more room for them till forage. But if the weather turns bad, you sort of maybe had the house. Back in January there, we had a house 30 ewes, just the grass situation and the weather. It was just, they were just marking up fields, and if you do too much damage to fields in January, you know, it takes a wee while for them to recover again. So it was just as handy just to run them in.
Whenever you house them, they're just on straw, are they? Bedded in straw, and are they feeding silage or hay, or what are you feeding them?
This, we normally, because we have a sawmill there at home, we've got a right bit of sawdust, so we normally bed them down in sawdust and then add just straw to them just to keep a wee bit of comfort there to them. But we always use a base of sawdust. It's easier to break down and get the worms in of the farmyard manure. We'd leave all that sort of dung sitting off the side of a laneway to get the worms into it for 8 months. It's just trying to get a good manure that you can spread, straw solely. It takes a wee while to break down, and we always found a wee bit of sawdust, but we're trying to make a good comfy bed for them. We're not looking big pens. We're only maybe putting 16 to 20 ewes in a pen, so you have small area for them to run around that's easier for catching whenever it comes to lambing.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. A big shed's grand at the start, or this time of year when you're just feeding them and bedding whatever, but I know what you're saying. If you want one with the head out and you're running around 50 of them, like, it's not straightforward. Like, it's just soaring everybody, like, including the ewes, have nothing to do with the current crisis. We'll keep going on, Alistair. I suppose just some other things that you're involved in there. You're chair of the Ulster Farmers Union Hill Farming Committee, and you're also chair of the Northern Ireland branch of the National Sheep Association. So how did you get involved in those two things, and what does it really involve for your those two roles? Does it take up much time, and what are you really working at the minute in those things?
I suppose how I got involved in that there, I made the mistake of going to an NSA meeting, and someone goes, so there's a young fella, put him on the committee and hear from the young farmers. And then I made another mistake of going to a farmers union meeting, and someone says that the next gen was starting, and they said I should put my name forward for the Ulster Farmers Union next gen. And I got on that there with another 20 odd young farmers here in Northern Ireland. And then from that there, I suppose I got put onto the Hill Farming Committee. And that was how I sort of got involved with both organisations.
So, like, and the Hill Farming Committee, what does that really involve? Like, how often are you meeting? And these are just, like, so if there's a policy happening that involves farming and uplands, it's run past yourselves for the union to, you know, make it their official policy or their official line on a certain issue, or is that just solely what it involves, or what else are you doing? Or,
well, it ranges, I suppose. The union needs a position on most things that affect farmers. So in the Hill Committee, we can be involved in anything from what's coming down the line in farm quality assurance till peatland wetting, blocking of drains up on hills, and trying to see how it will affect farmers. And, you know, we always have to go back to the farmers, how it's going to affect them, because it's their ground that's going to be affected. Talking about the price of lamb, you know, who can we talk to see where that there can be made better, or why is the lamb price fell, or same in the beef section, you know, it's real broad spectrum. You're talking about ammonia, it could be anything, even into Brexit and a trade between the GB and the NI, you know, for movement of livestock, even animal medicines, getting them in to make sure that they're lobbying. You know, you're part of a big group there. And the way I sort of looked at it was, there's no point complaining about something if you're not going to be able to go in there yourself and ask them questions and put, you know, your point of view across. Like, I'd be out there at the market and you hear farmers busy complaining, this isn't being done or that's not being done. And you say, well, have you done anything, or have you talked to anyone else about it, and be it a politician or someone within the farmers union? 9 times out of 10, they haven't. So that's why I always thought, you know, if you've got problems, you're better. You have to sort them out yourself. So being involved in their committees, you're able to bring it up at committee level. We normally meet once a month as a Hill Farming Committee. But as chair, you can be involved in a serious amount of meetings. And I suppose in the last 2 months, there's been talk about cultured meat was a big one there for a wee while in around Christmas, that we were meeting about it to find out exactly what it was about this, say, peatland, say, the price of wool, how can we improve it, what can we do? You know, you're always trying to look for solutions.
Mm-hmm. And you were involved there in a report a few weeks ago. I came out, I know both the UFU and the NSA, so I say you personally were heavily involved in it, about just your support for the Northern Ireland sheep sector. Like, there was a long list of things there. Well, I'll not go into it now, but various different things that farmers could do, you know, to improve their efficiency, so improve profitability, but also environmental sustainability. And some of our listeners will be, you know, familiar with the sheep welfare scheme in the south. Based, I suppose, loosely to point on that, what sort of feedback have you got on that, or I suppose from a fireman point of view, have farmers mentioned it to you, or are you hopeful that it will come of something? And even from within, say, the civil service and DERA, Department of Agriculture up in the north, how have they received that report?
Well, I suppose firstly, how that there came about was whenever the department released their future farming policy, sheep wasn't mentioned. So between, I suppose, the Farmers Union, the NSA, NAIAPA, NAIMEA, LMC, even the Wool Board got involved, was how can we put a document together to say why sheep needs support. So there was a report commissioned and was carried out, I suppose, looking at the sheep industry here in Northern Ireland and seeing where we fall behind or where maybe we are leaders in other areas. So that report was carried out. It's an interesting read there, and an awful lot of farmers should look into it, see what has been done. But as of yet, I suppose that was handed over to the DERA officials. We will have to wait and see what they come back with. The big problem, I suppose, there at the moment is there's no Minister for Agriculture. So the civil servants won't do much until they get a steer from a minister. But at least we have that there report sitting on their desk, that if the Stormont does get up and going again, the civil service will have what we want as farmers. You know, we're trying to be more efficient but keep productivity up. You're trying to support the farmers, sheep farmers, and most of the sheep are in lesser favoured areas, upland sort of areas. And one thing that I seen coming out of the report was numbers of sheep in Fermanagh have doubled in the last, I think it is it 12 to 15 years, where it seems to be beef farmers or suckler farmers here have sort of reduced numbers just because, I suppose, the ground being not able to hold the big cattle, they're changing over to sheep. So we've a few asks in there, trying to get a few pound back into the sheep farmers' pockets, trying to encourage farmers maybe to scan, vaccinate, make the national flock a healthier flock. Look at maybe tests for OPA and different other diseases that we would be better eradicating.
Yeah, fair enough. And I suppose for people who maybe don't know the proposals at the minute, it's next year or whenever there is a minister in place to reform agriculture policy. There's 17% coming off the basic payment scheme in Northern Ireland for headage payments, but as Alistair pointed out, that's only for the beef sector, for suckler cows and for finished cattle. So I understand exactly where you're coming from there. For mixed farms or mainly sheep farms, like they're just effectively getting a 17% cut and nothing back at all. So I understand where you're coming from with that. Just the last issue there, Alistair, you kind of mentioned it earlier when you were talking about going to Scotland to buy rams. He's also involved in looking at these issues that have come about because of Brexit and getting livestock from Britain back to Northern Ireland. So for a very quick bit of background, just for anyone who doesn't know this, it's since the UK left the EU and the withdrawal agreement between the EU and the UK was the Northern Ireland Protocol, and a requirement of that was for anyone in Northern Ireland who takes stock to Britain to show or seal or whatever and wants to bring it back, or if that stock is bought by another breeder in Northern Ireland and has to come back here, it has to do a 6-month standstill in Britain, so it can't come back for 6 months. And that's basically because of the export health certificate that has to accompany it. Now, there has been some solutions put up to that, Alistair. Have they been effective, particularly around the new export health certificate? I know there's been no sales have happened under that yet, export approved sales and that. But the other issue there as well, if you just give me a comment on it or review on it as around the scrapie situation and the health status of sheep, particularly as you were saying, sheep come from Scotland, or a lot of blackfish breeders were traditionally bought sheep in Scotland and brought them to Northern Ireland. That's kind of stopped overnight too. So there's a few different issues there, particularly around livestock movements across the Irish Sea. Are we any closer to solutions on any of those?
Well, in the sheep movement, I don't, as far as what we've been told, there won't be too much movement there. They will have to meet the EU's, I suppose, spec for coming in, that they all have to be genotype ones or from a scraby marner farm. The sales over there, there was a wee bit of movement there where if it was an export sale, they would be able to move over here on the day. But that doesn't suit an awful lot of breeds. Maybe smaller sales or sales that have been set up by breeders. The breeders can get together and have all their stock eligible for export till NI or even to Europe. But that there's at a cost, and an awful lot of sheep farmers over there don't see that they're enough financial reward for doing that. So if we're buying anything in Scotland, that's why we have to go over in July, is to have a look around, see if there's something there that we like the look of, get it tested, that then we know whenever we buy it, we can bring it in. But even if we buy it in an open mart, a ram will then have to do 60 days isolation in GB before it can come in. And for a female, it is 42 days, before it can come in. So, you know, we're buying, what we bought last year is for 2023's mating. You know, we're always having to work a year in front of ourselves for our breed anyway, because there's no export sales within Scotland or anywhere in the GB for them. The blackies, I'm just not too sure if there is export sales or if they've opened up, but they've suffered, I suppose, in the female front, because there were so many females being bought up as ewe lambs, wintered over in Scotland, and then coming in here till Northern Ireland in April time, ready for then being tipped in October again as replacement stock. So that's it's hit the sheep industry within Scotland pretty hard there for that ewe lamb, because the Irish folk can't go over and buy them.
No, that's it. So it's not very complicated. As you said, there is some solutions there around those seals, but there's a lot of hoops to jump through to meet that status for those seals. And in fairness, you know, from looking at it from a breeder's point of view in Britain, they have to weigh up, is that worth the extra bother just to be fairly selling the stuff straight over the Irish Sea, you know? Another complication of Brexit we have, but that's it. Alistair, very last thing, a tradition in this podcast, is the quick fire round. So I launch hard hitting questions at you, and you have to, as quick as you can, just with which option you agree with, or what you tend to, what your preference is. So do you call it a sprong, a fork, or a grape?
A grape.
What's your favourite tea, Lions, Barry's, or Pinjana?
Lions.
Are you more fond of a breakfast roll or a chicken roll?
I'd go for the breakfast roll.
When it comes to silage, are you Beals or the Pit?
Beals.
When it comes to wellies, Dunlop or Bikina?
Bikina.
if you're eating out, did you go for starter or dessert or both?
Both.
Good man, right answer. And do you have any dairying experience? Do you prefer a rotary parter or a herringbone parter or neither?
No dairy experience, but most boys are going for the robots now.
Yeah, that's it. Like the handy way. And the very last one there, would you prefer to pick stones or foot turf?
I don't like either. I suppose about our ground, I'd go for picking stones. There's not much stone in it.
That's it. I think, again, the labour efficient way there, fair play. No, Alistair, listen, that was great. I really enjoyed that run through what you're at, and particularly some of those issues, and fair play to you being involved in those different committees and representing farmers at the table, because the saying is, if you're not at the table, you're on the table on the menu. So all the best with lambing too. I suppose that's ahead of you, but the main thing is to enjoy it too, if you can at all possible. That's us wrapped up for another week in the Young Stock Podcast. Don't forget to get in touch with us with your opinions and feedback by emailing youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or leave us a WhatsApp voice note at 0868 366 465. We'll be with you next Monday. Thanks to Husqvarna for their support, and thanks to all you for listening. Happy farming.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.